Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Charity Digital podcast. And today we'll be discussing the latest trends in service delivery. My name is Liz, and I'm your host. And joining me are my two amazing Charity Digital colleagues, Lisa Schomet, who's our Business Development Manager, and Laura Stanley, who is our Content Lead Expert. Both Laura and Lisa will be delving into the fundamentals of good service delivery and will also outline ways that digital technology can help you. If this is your first time listening to our podcast, we hope you'll enjoy our chat today. And if you're a regular, welcome back to another one. And I'm absolutely sure that all of our listeners will pick up lots of helpful advice and tips, especially considering the way charities are delivering their services and how it's changed so much over the last few years. It's true that the pandemic may have accelerated trends towards digital service delivery, and it's also interesting to see that Charity Digital Skills Report 2021 revealed that nearly three quarters of charities plan to continue delivering in this way. But the digital world changes, and we all know that, really quickly, maybe too quickly for some of us. And we need to consider that what might have worked in 2020 might not work now. And with demand for services higher than ever, time is of the essence for charities to deliver their services so that they can help as many people as possible. Let's get our teeth into this podcast now. Welcome, Laura and Lisa. How are you both doing? How's your week going?
Very well, thank you. How are you? Thank you for that great introduction.
Good intro. Yeah, I loved it. I can't wait to sink my teeth in it.
shall we get started with the first question then, Lisa? I'm going to go right over to you. Let's do that. Let's start by discussing how service delivery has changed since COVID-19, and what do you think has caused the rise in digital service delivery?
That's a good first start. I'll say, obviously, as you said, Liz, with the pandemic, you know, there's been social distancing needs and people shielding for health reasons. That meant that traditional service delivery was had to stop or had to change a lot. And then loads of things that were, you know, being done maybe on a firefighting basis, on a temporary basis, are actually here to stay. With the teams working from home, it was very important for charity, you know, workers and people within organizations to continue engage with the beneficiaries, whether remotely or you know, manage to meet them in person if possible. You know, we've seen that towards the end of the second or third lockdown? I've lost count here. but also, I think, some charities had started delivering services before it became a necessity with the pandemic. And I think, for what I'm read, it stemmed from a need to, maybe there was a growing pressure on many organizations to deliver more with reduced funding before any pandemic pressure. So they needed to think outside the box. They needed to think about how to make their website better for people to access basic information. For instance, that's already service delivery. Many of them needing to report for funding, also needed to have more details about the impact measurements, and thought that by using technology, they'll be better able to provide data and results about how much their services were being accessed and how many beneficiaries they've had. So I think obviously the pandemic has played a big role, but I'm thinking that there were also organizations before that we're already considering about delivering service digitally, because we're in 2020. So let's explore what tech has to offer.
Yeah, completely. I think I was reading a lot about the Charity Digital Code of Practice, and the second pillar is being led by users. So, you know, as Lisa said, the shift towards digital happened because a lot of it had to with amid COVID, but now it is like about consolidating that and sort of mapping out what all your different users need. So that could mean donors, and in this case beneficiaries, but or volunteers or things like that. But just thinking about what they use your services for, and how they need to access it. So whether they need to have like video services or things, or maybe a phone chat would be better for them, I don't know, things like that. But also considering the barriers to that. So, you know, do they have access to the internet or technology and things like that? So there's a charity in Cornwall called St. Petrox, which is a homelessness charity, and they worked with Cornwall Council to give laptops to everyone who was staying in their accommodation so they could access online training and healthcare, all those things that you need the internet and tech for these days. And I just think that that's a really good way of thinking about exactly how their users need to act, to what they need, and how they're going to access it. So they're going to need somewhere to stay. So that's already what they're doing. But then, you know, as I said, I don't think you can do a lot without digital these days. And I think being able to access healthcare online, and they knew that they would need laptops, and then they found a way, they found a partner. So yeah, I think it all comes down to just making sure that that user-led part, you know, having a user-led mindset is, and I think that's what charities have always been really good at. So I don't think that's brand new. But as Lisa said, they have been doing it for years before. Yeah, we've always been good at putting users first, and we're going to continue doing it. And so things have changed, but also haven't in the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that we had to. I mean, charities are on the road to change anyway, weren't they? But then we were pushed into all of these other changes as well. So what about sort of our digital service delivery for this year? For the years coming up, I mean, what's our expectation around what users want?
So I think expectations have massively changed. I think because even people who weren't digitally savvy now are, because things move online. Mm-hmm. I was reading this article about digital laggards, people who didn't want to do it but were forced to change their ways. I think I'm just thinking of the way that we show tickets at venues and things like that. It's all paperless now, and I think user experience has become much more scrutinized as well. So we've got, you know, private companies like Amazon and Netflix providing really smooth personalized experiences, and it means that what is the norm is becoming a lot different to what it was before. And I think our expectations within the sector have changed as well. So the Charity Digital Skills Report that you mentioned earlier, Liz, 83% of charities offered digital services in 2021 in response to demand. That's a huge increase. So
huge.
I think we're seeing that there is an appetite for this, and that people want multiple options. And you can see that as well in the way that we work. So we have people wanting hybrid working, and I think it's a youth employment charity, the EY Foundation. Their service users, 51% of them wanted hybrid service delivery. Only 1 in 10 wanted virtual only, and less than a third wanted face-to-face. We just want as many options as possible. Yeah. I think it comes down to that.
Yeah, I agree. And also, if I just reflect on what the pandemic has shown, and if I just take a very simple example, schools and access to education remotely. So many students at the beginning were excluded because of, you know, not having a laptop or poor access to the internet, or having to share one laptop between three different levels of education. And I think there has been some good strides made. So some charities doing their best to provide laptops and access to Wi-Fi hotspots for kids to continue learning, but I think that's what this has shown as well, and what 2022 is really interesting, because all the restrictions have been lifted, almost all of them, is that there's the need to go back to physical to physical service delivery. But all the, I would say that the primary access, you know, just the information, having a look at the website or using a chatbot, that's what's now the norm, and that's what makes me think that it's actually we're more talking about hybrid service delivery, because what maybe used to be a little bit time consuming, i.e. answering people by email or by the phone about basic information, if we're able to route all of these demands towards a chatbot or a FAQ page or a better optimized website or social media, then it gives you more time to actually focus on, you know, on the cases, on people that need help, your beneficiaries that need all the supports that your organization is doing. And that makes me think about, you know, some very good good charities. One that's called Calm, and that have worked with an AR startup to develop a chatbot, really. And with that chatbot implemented within their website, they were able to actually become a 24/7 support service, because now I think the biggest expectations from loads of people is to access service anytime, anywhere. I don't know if you agree with me, Laura, but that's probably something that was starting at the beginning of the pandemic, but you know, when we've been in lockdown for the past 12 months, we've discovered that we can have access instant access to, you know, Amazon deliveries and food deliveries. So it's also important that this, you know, the commercial aspect of the instant world has translated into charities as well, and they've also been able to, thanks to technology, that they've also been able to deliver services 24/7. So that, you know, Calm campaign against living miserably with that chatbot, they were just able to provide support 24/7 with a near immediate response time, thanks to the chatbot. So you just enter your challenges or what you need, and then with artificial intelligence, the chatbot is able to provide the right information at the right time. And they were saying something like crazy amounts of interactions, like they've had over 25,000 connected users, over 1 million messages.
Wow.
They've been able to, you know, they've been able to share, like they've been able to answer over 50,000 questions. So that has reduced queue times drastically. Mm-hmm. But also this has enabled Calm volunteers to really attend to the most serious cases and to actually put the human element back where it was most needed.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, a key thing that I see for 2022.
That's amazing. Mm. I don't know, what you said just really reminded me of the British Heart Foundation's website. So they've sort of done the same thing, but with content. They have a big FAQs thing, specifically around COVID, which obviously affects people with heart problems, and people with heart problems might be very, very worried about that, or if you know someone with a heart problem. And they have all these lists of FAQs, and I was just like, that's such a good resource for people to go to. So they're directing people there while at the same time answering, continuing their other services at the same time. I just think that's so, it's about being where people want you. I think this is what I was referring to in the being user-led thing. It's thinking about all the different touch points where you can help your service users, so they realize that people will be looking for that sort of information, how it might affect them, what their rights are. I think there were literally elements of what your rights are, or what to do if you feel like your workplace isn't taking COVID seriously and you're shielding and things like that. And I just think that making sure that you think about all the different ways you can reach people. Mm. So that chatbot is so great, but it might not work for certain charities, but it works for Calm, and that's brilliant. Mm. But you know, there's live chat functions, phone, video calls, all these different ways that we can reach people, and it's not ruling one out for the other, but also not taking them up for whichever sake. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that there's been an absolutely massive shift, hasn't there, in the last couple of years, of people's expectations and what people actually need to know now, because COVID has, obviously, it's been an illness has affected a lot of us, and we've got different needs now, health-wise as well. So, I mean, you've been discussing a lot of the chatbots and other technologies, and Laura, you made a really good point that it's not, you know, just one shoe that fits everybody. Mm-hmm. So what about other sort of technology that can charities use, and where would they go, actually, if they just wanted a starter point, sort of, you know, take the first steps, and they're not doing this, but they really want to know how to do it?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I would say I have an example that comes to mind. Well, that was during the pandemic, but I think they probably have kept that. So and I actually did a webinar around data where I told that example as well. There's a charity that's called React, and that usually offers emergency disaster relief to faraway countries like Nepal or other countries where, you know, there's been an earthquake or fire, etc. And they rely on a lot of volunteer, on the basis to provide all that information, to provide, you know, what emergency needs do you have? And when the pandemic started, actually, they were like, you know, we should also do something in the UK, because it's an emergency situation in the UK, providing protective equipment, providing food, etc. And basically what they did, they already had I think they were quite advanced in tech, but what they did was to partner with a Tech for Good program. So in the example here, the Tech for Good program was managed by JP Morgan, the bank that I think people are familiar with. And basically they collaborated together to develop a tech that would allow volunteers to quickly enter on the iPad what they needed most, when, you know, what was the stock, what did they need, and by when. And it also was very secure, because they were conscious that some volunteers didn't have access to the internet everywhere all the time. So it allowed to stock all the information offline. And then once they were in a secure place where they could log onto the Wi-Fi, feed that data almost like instantly to the main to the center. So they were really able to quickly assess and catalog the needs and to, you know, push the right equipment towards the, you know, the most important region. So the fact that, you know, it helps you speed your service delivery is, you know, was one of the best successes of that project. And yeah, and to source that tech, you know, there's a lot of pro bono programs and Tech for Good programs that charities can look into, because they can get, you know, state of the art tech skills for nothing. Yeah, I don't know, Laura, if you have other examples or if you're thinking of other things.
That's so interesting. Yeah, what a great example. So I wrote down Force for Good, actually, because I think they're reopening their applications soon. So everyone should get on. But yeah, basically think about your partnerships. I think that's a really great point. So I mentioned St. Petrox, who partnered with the council, but there are also lots of councils, I think West Midlands Council, who are providing digital boot camps, which can help. So I think that it can help your beneficiaries if you sort of need to teach them sort of skills on how to access certain services. I mean, that might be exactly what your remit is. It might not be helping them access your services. It might be just that you're trying to help. I'm trying to think of people like elderly charities and things like that. So there's Barclays Digital Eagles, isn't there? So
yes.
Yeah. And there's a lot of resources on Good Things Foundation, which is a charity that's dedicated specifically for helping digital exclusion. So they have lots of resources and lessons on that you can access online about how to teach people how to use a tablet and things like that. So you can give that to your own volunteers, or and share it that way. Or if you're helping people access your services in person, like with laptops and things, showing that, give them the link and help them do that. But there's also, and they also have a network of people who are trained to teach other people how to teach, like tech. And I do think the digital exclusion thing is part of the biggest barrier to all of this. There's also a site called Neighbourly, which is a really good, which is like, when I was learning about it, I was like, oh yes, so it's like Tinder for charities. So like charities can match up with different corporations who have volunteers ready for different skills. So they might need someone to help with their social media or things like that. But it also means that if someone's really good at, you know, what React needed, like building software, they find someone who can do that for them. So I think, yeah, just think about all the different opportunities there are to connect with other experts in certain areas, and not the charity, you know, there's a lot of goodwill for charities out there, I think, and a lot of companies who have volunteering days that they want to use and want to partner with local charities to do certain things. So I'd say think there. Just again, I think it's sort of, I'd hate to use the word mapping out again, but just sort of map out your opportunities. So there'll be charities that want, there'll be corporate companies in your local area who'll want to work with local charities specifically. Or if you've got an area that specifically relates to something that a corporation deals with, they'll want to deal with that as well. So yeah, again, like Barclays Digital Eagles, they know that it's in their interest, isn't it, to have to help older people access their banking services. So by teaching people, it also has a charitable benefit.
I mean, go ahead, Lisa, go ahead.
Those are very interesting points, because sometimes you think that to your point, Laura, there's a lot of things now that are digital. So in everyday life, if you have to deal with, you know, with admin, you know, admin or taxes or anything, unfortunately, you need to be digital. So you need to have the tech, and you need to have the sort of Wi-Fi connections, which is not for everybody. Not only the older, older people, but also homeless or refugees or people who live in shelters or in temporary accommodations. They don't have all of that. And sometimes when we talk about digital, we're wondering, okay, what can we do? And this is exactly what you pointed out. There's a lot of resources out there to make sure that charities helping these vulnerable people can also teach them about using digital, because those are skills they will not only need to access their services, but also to live and, you know, and to access other benefits. But sometimes, and to your point, I think it's based on user needs. Sometimes it can, you know, you can already rely on existing technologies. And I heard of a software similar to Zoom that Age UK used to do the befriending, to continue the befriending services, called Silverline. From a charity perspective, it was a bit like Zoom. So software and using with a laptop, but from the user perspective, the beneficiary's perspective, it was just a landline, it was just a phone.
That's amazing.
So technology also enables you to continue. You don't want to usually impose any new things on your beneficiaries if they don't want to. But the fact that tech, and I think we'll see more and more of that in 2022, how can you use tech to carry on delivering your service as normal without having your users to choose something new or to learn something new? You know, if it's you know, keep on using the telephones or using technology to actually send more letters and mails to the people that are most remote, but at least they have an address, so you can still contact them. But using technology to find these people, I think that's also another way of looking at digital service delivery to me. Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, what matters is what your users actually need. And if you, for instance, if you realize that most of your, you know, of your younger beneficiaries or users are, you know, curious about you, find you through social media, then yeah, have a look at how, you know, how you can make the most of social media and how you can maybe create some short videos about, you know, basic educational content about your cause or about how you can help them. So ultimately it's about finding them where they are. And like you said, Laura, there's a lot of tech for good companies that are ready to help you on that journey. We've got quite a lot of examples on the Charity Digital website. So we wrote some articles and did some podcasts about it. So yeah, there's definitely, and I think the UK is a really good place for that. There's a lot of organizations that are, you know, social good or social purpose, probably more than other places in Europe. So yes, it's it can be a bit daunting as well, especially for small charities. So that's why, you know, there's a lot of organizations like ourselves, but you know, the Catalyst and like some Nesta that can also put all of that information in you know, simple places for charities to engage with.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Lisa. Thank you for that, because, you know, it's always like, well, where, how do you choose the right tech for your charity? And why would you want to fix something if it's not broken? So using that, you know, that example of Age Concern, and that they're using telephones, and of course, well, that they're reaching out to a certain type of audience. And yeah, I guess you really need to analyse and look at, you know, what is the right tech for you. Laura, what would you sort of add to that?
I completely agree, basically. It's not about tech for tech's sake. In 2021, for example, more than a fifth of charities had to cancel their services because beneficiaries didn't have the tech to use them. That's just a waste of time and money, isn't it, really? And also, it's not going to give it would compromise your relationship with your beneficiaries as well if you're offering something that they can't use. And you don't want to do that. So, but they can be little things that you can change, I think. I'm just thinking about our customer service team, our ops team. So we're a charity that helps other charities. So the likelihood of someone needing us out of hours is quite small, I think. So, but we have changed our hours now so that our customer service team is available from 9 to 5:30, which is much better for people in our, you know, who are at work, who will need to, it makes a lot of sense for us to be available for those hours. So yeah, it's about the right tech, the right channels that'll reach the right people at the right time, I think. So yeah, if you can change your hours, split your shift maybe, or, you know, find volunteers in different time zones if you need to. Think about all the different ways that people can help you. And it's not all about, yeah, exactly what Lisa said, it's not all about tech. And it's thinking about what people need, ultimately, I think.
Absolutely. Because it's funny that you mentioned how as Charity Digital we've sort of adapted, and we're still adapting, because I'm pretty sure the team is also looking at, you know, live chat technology or chatbot technology, so that we're available almost like 24/7, not physically, but we're available. And I was thinking about tech as well, that is useful to improve service delivery. And I was reading about virtual reality. So I know it's a big, you know, fancy word, you know, sometimes you don't really know what it means, but I found very good examples about how virtual reality can not only help your beneficiaries, but also help your volunteers or your employees to deliver even better service delivery. There's something that the NSPCC has been doing for quite a few years. I think it's called Talk to Me, which is an online simulation for adults that are working with children who may be victims of abuse. And basically what the VR software and the, you know, when you have your VR goggles, what it helps you to see is to be put into situations, different situations, so that you can better analyze, you know, how to respond to maybe a child that's at risk of abuse. How can you spot this? What should you do, and how should you answer? So ultimately, using that VR headset and VR software and technology, you can deliver even better service, because, you know, when traditionally you would have had to go to a specific location to have that training for a couple of days and be physically in a room or, you know, with actors, now you can have it from the comfort of your home. And well, you need to have VR goggles, obviously, but I think it is really good also to have that training and share that training with a much wider audience. And on the same theme of VR, from the beneficiaries' point of view, I think there's a couple of hospices and the Grey Hormone Hospital that do that for children and that want to put their little patients more at ease with the very daunting hospital environment by showing them, you know, in 360 view, where the playroom is, where the ops theater is, and where all the facilities are, so that they, you know, when they come, they feel that they know already the place and they're not scared. So in both cases, of course, VR needs, you know, maybe some investment. Again, you can get probably some grants if you have a project like that. But ultimately, if you're able to serve more beneficiaries and you're able to train more people, I mean, what's not to like, you know, using more of tech. But I know it can be expensive, can be complicated. So I think it's also important for charities to, first of all, assess what, you know, what they've done over the past 2 years, what has worked and what hasn't, mm-hmm. What they're capable of. And then from that, you know, have a good way to start looking at things. Okay, you know, we have limited tech skills. Do we need to speak with a Tech for Good program or the likes of Nesta or pro bono group so that we have another tech skill on top? Or do we just, you know, punch at our weight, not above our weight, and use what we used to. So yes, it's all very inspiring. I don't know how you think about it, both of you.
Yeah, no, that is so inspiring. Those examples that you gave, they're absolutely fantastic, and outlining some of the fundamentals there, Lisa, that's really great. And Laura, just before we wrap up, do you have any further examples of sort of what charities are doing in the sector with the digital? Would you like to add anything?
There's a really good charity called Turn to Starboard, which offers sailing experiences to armed forces impacted by military operations. And quite similarly to the hospital example that Lisa just gave, they use VAR to show people what the experience will be like. Because a lot of the people they're dealing with have PTSD or claustrophobia, and, you know, going into a situation where they're not sure of is not going to be helpful for them. Yeah, so I think that's a really exciting way that charities are using it. There's also an inclusivity project that Exeter University were running, where they did 3D tours of historical sites in Cornwall, so they would be accessible to people who wouldn't usually be able to get to them. I think you saw a lot of that in lockdown, so that's definitely something I think we're seeing that's becoming a lot more common because of that. So you know, museums that are putting their artwork online,
yes,
but in a way that they can still experience being in the museum. I just think it's one of those examples of why should we exclude anyone these days when you can reach everyone if you think about it, things in the right way. I would like to end with something. So I asked a couple of our customer service team what their top tips for sort of their service delivery is. And the main thing that came out of it was like making sure that support is in the right places for people that need them, and showing patience. So like initially you have no idea of people's skills or knowledge, so you make sure you provide the time to give knowledge and show empathy if they don't understand, because customers are often hardest on themselves. Like we've all been, I mean, I'm literally queen of doing this, like being like, oh, I'm so silly because I've done it wrong. And but you know, actually just being empathetic, and it's only making sure they know it's only easy if they know it. And I think, yeah, okay, we use that for our service users who are getting a very specific service from us, that like they need to help with the technology they're using. But I think if you're trying to help other people use your services or use digital, I think that's really important. So
yeah. Oh, nice that, That is such a great note to end on. Thank you so much for that, Laura. Yeah. And it's been great, hasn't it, just talking about this. And it's so necessary as well to have these conversations. Thank you, Laura and Lisa, for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Supporting our podcast. Thank you to our listeners for being with us. And we hope that you've enjoyed our chat and have been inspired. There's certainly lots of valuable takeaways to mull over and to action on. So thank you to our speakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you out there to everyone listening to us. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will say goodbye for now.
Bye.
Bye.